content discussed on this show is not necessarily the opinion of the cast of Spiritually Raw, and topics quite often are for mature audiences only. So, if you happen to have your 13-year-old listening in,
that's your problem.
Welcome to Spiritually Raw. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We're super excited to be here today. As you can see, we have two great guests. Pimpy's going to be up first. And we just want to take a quick little moment to thank everybody for taking the time out. We know there are a ton of opportunities and a ton of shows on YouTube to choose from. And the fact that you take the time to watch our show and comment on it and share, we can't thank you enough. And we're so appreciative. And we read all of your comments, good, bad, or indifferent. Trust me, I read through every single solitary one of them, and I appreciate everything. And we just wanted to thank you and show our love back to you and let you know how grateful we are for you for tuning in. And for those of you that don't know, we also have a Facebook page, Facebook.com/groups/spirituallyraw, and you can also connect with us on Patreon.com/spirituallyraw.
Right on, everybody. Thank you very much. We got some cool guests today. As you can see,
I'm so excited.
We got a busy little screen here, so let's get moving in. Let's dive right in. Hello. So the gentleman over there waving at everybody there, that is going to be our Currency Corner segment with Pimpy. He'll tell you a little bit about him. So Pimpy is, as you know, I'm starting to get used to playing April's part here, like reading the guest description. So please bear with me, everybody. It's like, oh my gosh. The leading authority on Nisar and Jisar, cryptocurrency, gold, silver stocks, and foreign currency, and founder of Pimpy's Investment Chat, which you can see on Facebook and on YouTube, which I'm sure he'll give us a shout out of where to get it. Oh, right here, youtube.com/pimpy43. So Pimpy, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
Glad to be back.
He's used to your intros. April gives like a 30-minute.
You would think after all this practice, Jay, he'd be a whiz at it by now.
Oh yeah. Man, I tell you, it's I gotta give it credit, man. You know what I mean?
See, that's how you get somebody to know, you know, put them in your shoes and
make yeah.
Like punishment, yeah. Man. It's punishment.
It's all good though.
But see, I have the benefit of editing or, you know, at least redoing my videos if I mess it up. When you do, if you're doing something live, it's a little bit different, of
That's
course.
What it is,
you got to roll. You got to let it roll.
Yeah, they got to see how you all live. So, okay, let's just dive right in, okay? Lots of misconceptions going on with the Fed right now about who does or doesn't own the Fed. Can you give us some insight on that?
Yeah, actually, that's a funny thing because I am shocked that people don't know a lot about the Federal Reserve, and they think it is a government institute, but that's not the case. The Federal Reserve is actually a private bank, and it's owned by the five richest banking families. It was purposely designed this way. The Federal Reserve, as you know, was created in, 1913, in response to the fact we did not have a sound monetary infrastructure back then, so we kept going into like these mini depressions, and so they took some of the greatest minds, including JP Morgan, who was not the richest guy at the time, but he definitely was a Wall Street guru. And then they as you know the story, they went to Jekyll Island, met in private, and came up with the design of the Federal Reserve. Now the Federal Reserve is not just one bank, it's actually 12, believe it or not. It's made up of 12 regional banks, and so each one of them holds a board member on the board of governors. And so the thing is, five of the seats are owned and controlled by the families. The other seven are appointed by the president, but the way JP Morgan set it up, he made it real slick, and that is a president can appoint a new governor every 2 years, and that person stays there for 14 months. But what that does is it allows the five families then to, of course, manipulate who gets in and who gets out, so they continue to hold control of the Federal Reserve.
Do you know exactly who the five families are?
Oh, let me see. JP Morgan's family, of course, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers. What is Oh, I actually know, and for the life of me, I can't think of it off the top of my head.
The Queen of England, is she also owner of it?
You know, I heard that she owns shares of it. That is, you know what? I have not been able to find whether that is true or not, but it would not be surprising to me, considering at the time the Fed was created, we just got done with the whole Civil War thing. We had the big fire of San Francisco, so we needed money. So that would not be surprising to me, but to be quite honest, I don't know that. I've not heard that.
Do you, so who's got it now? Is Trump in control of it?
Oh yeah.
How did House he actually get control of it?
Well, House Resolution 748, which is the CARES Act, allowed for Trump to then go ahead and take control of the Federal Reserve by bringing him into the Treasury. And as you know, the Treasury is controlled by the the Treasurer, which is Mnuchin. Snoochie Moochie, but he's appointed and works at the pleasure of the president. Therefore, he does the president's bidding is what's going on. Now, you're starting to get into an area, I think, where you're going, of course, is how this is all tied into the whole Nasera Jacera aspect.
I guess we are now.
Yeah, so
exactly.
It is because...
mental telepathy.
Yeah, well, because a lot of people are asking, how is this possible? And then you still have a lot of naysayers out there, but the truth is he does control the Federal Reserve. You want proof? Look at him pump out trillions and trillions of dollars every month. And essentially what I saw Trump doing at first was a little scary, I have to be honest with you, because if it was any other politician doing this, I would be very reserved, actually very, very scared. But the fact that I want to believe what Trump is doing for us and the rest of the world is something very positive. So I have faith in what he's doing. Basically, what the Federal Reserve is doing is they're pumping out trillions of dollars and buying up debt everywhere. All the debt is shifting from the people into the Federal Reserve. But here's where people are missing. This is what they're missing. It isn't just here. The Federal Reserve is pumping out trillions of dollars and giving it to other central banks around the world. Spain and Italy are buying up their debt using the dollars that we sent there. Where's this debt coming from? The people. Where's the debt going to? The Federal Reserve. So basically that same structure that has been criminally existing and enslaving us in the debt is now being sacked with all the debt.
Can I ask you... Because that was a whole lot right there.
Yeah.
So when you say they're buying up the debt, does that mean like the Federal Reserve is buying everybody's housing, mortgages, credit card, cars? What can you help?
Consumer debt? Business?
Yeah, what exactly
is it mainly
do you mean
consumer
by that?
Private debt?
Okay, so what you're seeing is you are seeing now, see here in the Sarah Jacera sphere, we have extreme versions versus more down-to-earth versions of this. You have some people go, there is this galactical space people that's going to come. Like, oh, man, come on. If I want to talk about this, but just like me when I first started reading about it, when you come across that, it tends to discredit the true movement. And I don't know if that's planned or not, but it's discouraging to hear. So as far as the debt is concerned, is it being bought up? Yeah, if you look at what's going on with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they're part of this most recent bill that passed is, you know, people are not allowed to go in foreclosure. If they need help, they can get loans, you know. But I keep telling people, be careful, because there's a difference between forbearance, which you still have to pay later on, versus debt forgiveness. Now, we are seeing more and more people come forward saying that for some reason, their debt has disappeared. And that includes me on my student loan. Everybody that knows that story knows that my debt just one day up and freaking disappeared.
And can you refresh our audience? Because I want them to hear from your
it's
mouth, not ours. But what
story.
Was that amount?
Yeah, it was over $150,000 in April. You know, I have you to thank for that, because we were just chatting about Santa surfing. And she's like, have you seen these tweets, these people's testimony? And I was thinking, no, that can't be realistic. I mean, but at the same time, you know, who am I to doubt it? I mean, everything I'm reading, this is what's supposed to happen. But as I go and I'm chatting with her, I just jump onto my credit report online real quick. And lo and behold, I go, where is my student debt? It's like gone. It's
oh,
literally.
You didn't even ask it. You should be like, okay, it's not.
I think because he was in shock.
No, I know.
I'm talking to myself. I'm like, this doesn't look real. What the heck happened to my student loan debt? So to avoid getting overly excited and doing, you know, the pee-pee dance I always talk about, you know, in my videos, I said, I have to call the creditor, because maybe it's just something that's not on my credit report. And so I called the creditor the next day, which is the Department of Education. So people go, well, maybe they sent it to collection. There is no collection. They are the collections. It's a guaranteed student loan. It's the government. So they can garnish your wages, everything else. But I have 13 years of on-time payments. It's never been late. It says discharged on my credit report. And when I called a creditor, they said, oh, your debt's been discharged. I go, well, what is it? I know what it means, but what does that mean to you? You know, lady's like, it's not there. And I go, well, where did it go? She goes, I don't know. You just don't have the debt no more. And I go, is it going away? Was it suspended? She goes, Mr. Freeman, there's no debt.
Do you think it's just federal? Do you think it's going to start this Nassar, Jassar? Do you think it's going to start with maybe federal as it cleans up, or is it just going to run the gamut?
You know, here's my feeling on this. Now, the guaranteed student loan is federal. Those people can't escape that debt through bankruptcy. So that makes more sense than anything else, is to get rid of the debt that people are sacked with that they couldn't otherwise get out of, or any time or any kind of debt in which the government could control your payroll, garnish your wages, anything like that. It would make sense to me that they would do that first. Okay, because the other debt, you could bankrupt. Guaranteed student loans, you can't bankrupt.
Right.
So, yeah, that, I mean, mine is gone. People are like, well, where did you go? What did you do? What is your letter in the alphabet? I go, that's not it. Because my other half, her last name is Valdez. And so she's on the other end of the, when she did her debt, other end of the alphabet. So hers is gone as well. But hers was just a little over 10,000. But we don't know why ours is gone. And when we called them, it's gone. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's gone.
And congratulations. That's incredible. I wanted to backtrack one thing I heard you say.
Sure.
The foreclosures, if somebody isn't making their payments right now because of COVID or, you know, anything, or let's just say they were in the hospital or a death or an accident. Did you just say that there are no more foreclosures?
Yeah, that's part of the relief package. That the first one is people are not allowed to banks. Financial institutes are not allowed to foreclose on people. They cannot legally kick them out. Just like people who can't pay rent, they're saying that land. Now, this is a little bit different, and I'm curious at how they're going to be able to pull this off. But they're saying landlords are not allowed to kick out their tenants. Okay,
but then the private landlord, they would, I would imagine, get economic remuneration from.
Yes, that's exactly how it works. And
so,
where does that come
somehow,
from?
Right,
the Federal Reserve, the money that's being pumped out of the Federal Reserve.
So they're not totally screwed.
No, not at all. But I think it's very interesting. You can't dictate to a private property owner what they can and can't do with their property. But, I mean, there are safeguards that were put into place to make sure that does not happen, which is very unique.
Interesting.
Taxes. I want to just talk about taxes here for a quick sec, because is coming up a lot. People say, oh, well, I hear that Trump is eliminating income tax or capital gains.
Yep.
Is there any relevance to that?
So here's the great thing about the Nassar and Jassar is, you know, I got to thank you guys, because the first time I came on your show, I generally knew a lot of information, but not a ton. So after that gentleman you had on there asked some really good questions. I was like, dang it, now I really want to dig into this. And so that's exactly what I did, is now I have. So not only, if you don't, I'm going to do a selfish plug a little bit. I hope you guys don't mind.
Go for it.
Yeah, go for it.
We are talking in a lot in general terms, but if people really want to get a lot of details, you could go to my YouTube channel, which is Pimpy's Investment Chat, and watch my Nassar Jassar videos, because not only do I show you it's possible, but I show people that it's already happening. So as far as what Trump wants to do, there's no secret that he wants to abolish the IRS. So people go, how's he doing that? He keeps doing tax reform and simplifying how we do taxes. Mm-hmm. If it gets to the point where we're truly just putting it on a little 8x10 card or whatever you want to call it, and then we send it in, there's no reason to have the IRS. Just do away with all the complicated laws, and that's what we see are happening. Also, the byproduct or the other benefit of this is then there becomes no need for the IRS, which, again, is as a privately owned company. It's a collection agency for the Federal Reserve. People go, oh, they're these federal government. No, that's another one of those private institutes, all right, with the power of the government backing them up is what it is. So can Trump do with it? Yeah, we know he is. He's already pushing, and unfortunately, the people keeping that from happening are the Democrats standing in their way because they control the House of Representatives. There's no way in God's green earth they're going to give Trump a major win like this. What does Trump want? To do away with payroll taxes. He also wants to do away with capital gains. And the reason for that is, have you ever seen places like in Detroit and where these houses are abandoned, burnt, they look like crap. Yeah. Okay, the reason why nobody ever sells them or does anything to fix them up is because of capital gains tax. For most part, people are upside down on a property. So they only take a loss if they sell the property. But if they don't have to pay any kind of real capital gains on there whatsoever, those properties would be sold. You would see a revivalent of neighborhoods everywhere. Mm-hmm. They would fix those houses or destroy them and put up new ones. There's factories that have been abandoned. It's the same situation. So Trump knows this. Just do away with capital gains tax. Just do away with payroll tax. Put more money into the hands of the people and then trust them to make their own financial decisions.
Amen, brother. Amen, brother. That's good stuff. Hey, everybody, that is Currency Corner with Pimpy. Brother, thank you again for being here with us today. And
thank you.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. And remember, everybody, you want to give another shout-out to your YouTube channel for those who
are... Yeah, if everybody wants to come and see the Nasera Gisera videos in detail, come check me out. It's Pimpy's Investment Chat. You guys will have a lot of fun there. It's pretty silly. We did the rock in one of my videos, so, you know, I don't know if you caught that, AJ.
Yeah, you got some cool stuff.
I watch your videos every day. You guys, trust me. If you want to know what's going on in the world financially, not only does he cover Nasera and Gisera, but he's an expert in gold, silver, foreign currencies, the Vietnam dong, the
Iraqi dinar. Yeah.
See, he likes. See, they like your intros better than now. I give the intros.
All right, you guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, stay well, okay, man. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Okay, so
that's awesome.
Yeah, so our featured guest, how are you? We have Dr. Sage Breslin, everybody, getting right into this flatlined 8 times to learn how to truly transform her life. Dr. Sage teaches others how to reinvent their lives without having to die to it. Dr. Sage is a transformational life and business coach and the CEO of the Sage Wisdom Institute and the best-selling author of Breaking Through, the Conscious Leaders and Entrepreneurs Guide to Amplify Intuition, Clarity, Vision, Motivation, and Productivity. Welcome, Dr. Sage. How are you?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, hope I did that opening
good
for you.
See, I can see it's right on your third eye. Does that help you accelerate or bring out or open up your third eye?
It is. It's enhanced intuition. And for me personally, it was something that I began wearing after I had a real epiphany. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you have something really big happen and then, you know, the next day it's kind of fades a little bit. And by the next week, you've sort of forgotten what it was that you learned. And a month later, you're back to your old bad habits. So I needed something that I could do every single day to remind me of what the epiphany was so that it wouldn't fade.
That's awesome. It's better than the string around your
finger. Yeah, I was going to say, it's like a rubber band for your memory kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Well, and of course, everybody that I interact with asks me about it. So it's not just once a day to put it on and take it off. It's all of those other opportunities to talk to people about it.
I love it.
Dr. Sage, let's go right into what happened that got you to flatline 8 times.
Yeah, well, I wish it were just one experience. It wasn't. It was a whole series of experiences. And I wouldn't recommend it, honestly. Yep. You know, because I guess lots of people who flatline just don't come back. Apparently, I'm a bit more like the Energizer Bunny. So
good for you.
So the first time that I flatlined, I was 17, and it was following a suicide attempt, actually. Mm. I had a horrific experience in which I was, at the time, being held by a local cartel, and I was sold for $500 and a gram of cocaine. Mm. And the buyer raped me savagely, and I came to in front of my house. I was disheveled. And I couldn't think of any reason why I would continue living. It was sort of like, okay, no, I don't want to anymore. And I swallowed a bottle of pills. And for a long time, my memory was that I sort of jerked up and vomited and then got in my car and drove to a cathedral where my mom used to worship, and that I talked to the minister all night long. And that was my memory for a really long time, until I was sitting in a conference on near-death experiences, because by then I'd actually had many others. And as I was sitting listening to the speaker, the bubble in my brain just popped, and I realized I could no sooner have gotten in a car and driven, even with remnants of the medication that I swallowed. I could never have done that. It wasn't physically possible. And I had the actual memory of what occurred when I was clinically dead. And I met my version of God. You know, other people see white lights. I'm not a white lighter. I've never seen the white light.
The tunnel, but, anything?
Yeah. No puppy running towards you, nothing like
tunnel,
that?
Or, yes,
no cat, maybe.
Not exactly like that. But, I mean, it was, you know, I really had the ultimate come to Jesus meeting. I sat there, and my memory was that I spent all night talking to this minister about how disconnected I felt from God, and how deeply ashamed I was by the decisions that I'd made, that other people had made for me, by the things that had happened that felt like, you know, couldn't be taken back, and came back to life feeling so assured that there was no disconnection.
How long do you think it went on for?
You know, by the clock, I think it was 22 minutes, which is really
that's a long time.
And wow, interesting, like, phenomenon.
That's like 10, 20 lifetimes.
That's got to have felt like a lifetime there, right?
Or yes, just yes. A lot. Yes.
Was it like you were seeing just yourself?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, my memory was very much sort of like, at the time I had a Ford Mustang it felt like I was driving. And when I got there, I felt like I was in my body, but time was weird.
Yeah.
And when I came back to life, I mean, I literally was zapped into my body. I launched up off the floor. It was at that point in time that I started throwing up, and then passed out.
Just
and
like when the movies.
Yep. And it was an extraordinary experience. Like I said, I wouldn't recommend it for anyone. It left a lot of bells and whistles. Anybody who's flatlined before understands that, you know, when you come back, it's like coming back with this, you know, sensitivity on crack. It is, everything's super loud. Every taste, every smell, every sight, every emotion, everything is just up to
elevated.
Here.
Wow.
And did that last for like a day or a week, or
is that just been going
on
with
you? Still going on.
Still with me.
That's it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
What's been the adaption period for that? Was there one, or were you like, this is kind of cool, or this is like, oh man, when's this going to go away?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think for years I felt like when is this going to stop? I mean, I think I learned to adapt over time, and, you know, there are certain things I can do now. I went into training to learn how to sort of get a hold of it a little bit, but I definitely see how people can, you know, get addicted to alcohol or drugs or because of how noisy it is. So, that was the most probably impressive, experience I had with flatlining. I had then 2 years later, I was in a terrible car accident, and I had kind of a classic NDE, watched my life just flash right in front of my eyes.
Why do you think it happened more than once?
I'm going to call it divine 2x4 therapy. I don't know.
That's maybe good.
Divine 2x4 therapy.
Have some learning curve issues.
All right.
Someone wants you here. Something wants you here.
Yes.
Something.
Yes. And that's what I've come to learn.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
That's great.
So you got into, through this, you're doing energy medicine now. And can you explain to our audience what is energy medicine, and give us a scope of that? Because I know there's so many terms just flying loosely everywhere about it, but how you get it and how you do it. Yeah. Can you give us a scope of that, please?
Yeah. So I have been practicing energy medicine for about 25 years. That is the broadest label we have for anything that is sort of vibrational in nature. So acupuncture is vibrational medicine, and I don't do that. But energy medicine would be anything where you're directing universal energy. So I think one of the most popular is Reiki, where you harness universal energy and you flow it out through your hands to somebody else. And that can be done when somebody is with you physically or remotely. I can do it, on my screen, and I am a Reiki master. That is one of the more sort of methodical scientific practices. But there are things like hands-on healing, and other people operate just using the vibration or energy of crystals, herbal remedies, flower essences. So those are all sort of in that big overarching class.
Do you think that things are going to start moving even, within the past few years, holistic medicine is obviously a lot more coming to the forefront. But with that being said, do you think, or what do you see in the next 2 to 5 years? Do you see holistic just like totally taking over? Or do you think it's still going to have a balance of both?
I think we'll probably try to do our best to work with integrative medicine, which really is, East plus West. It is using all of the, as you said, holistic or integrative medicines with Western medicine as well. It's an interesting combination. We see a lot of automation in surgery. We see a lot of things being done, remotely and virtually. Now, given what we've all experienced here for the last, nearly 80 days, we are watching, telehealth take over, medicine. And it's been a big learning curve for a lot of doctors, but it's also shown, I think, the population how much can be done remotely. So it'll be interesting. I think if we have one big solar flare, we might be losing some of our technology, and we'll probably need to return to what are, more of the natural medicine.
Do you think that's going to happen, or were you just kidding when you said it?
Well, I'm not really kidding.
You seemed pretty serious when you said it. That's why I asked.
Yeah. I mean, we have them all the time. They're just fairly small, but.
The big kaboom. You think the big boom's happening?
Like in what context? Like blow up the earth?
Not blow up the earth, but wipe out a couple grids here or there.
I definitely think that there already is research on some of the smaller solar flares knock out satellites. They, mess with our technology, and, we all fuss and moan about it, but nobody really stops to think like, well, we've become pretty dependent on this technology.
Yeah, haven't we though?
Also want
to. Yeah, that's so true.
Hone our skills in some of the more natural or old school ways,
What is divine 2x4 therapy?
Oh, divine 2x4 therapy. It's when God kicks you in the ass.
Yep, kicks you over the 2x4.
Oh, that was
That's what she was referring to.
Okay, got it.
No, read your notes, young lady.
Well, no, I wasn't sure if that was it or not. Okay, cool.
That's it, yeah.
I noticed too, and I'm seeing it more and more, but alternative practices, referring it to as such, if you would. They're getting more and more, seem like, especially Reiki seems like it's getting more and more credibility in traditional medicine world. Have you noticed that from your end? More of an affirmation or acknowledgement that, hey, okay, are you seeing that?
Yeah, definitely. I look back to when I first started in practice as a psychologist, things were very traditional. They were separated out. If somebody did hands-on healing, they were considered woo-woo. And now quite a few of the CEOs that come in to work with me or that I work with virtually have become Reiki masters themselves, or they're putting in their calendar time to not just have a massage or some acupuncture or to go work out at the gym. They're also having Reiki sessions. So I think we're noticing that it is becoming a little bit more mainstream.
Yeah, more the norm.
And you got that clairvoyant side to yourself too, right?
Yes.
So you've got a couple of cool little parts going on there. You had a Reiki master here, eight times on the other side, come back with sight.
Yeah.
I mean, wow, man.
Were you open to it when you were younger, or did you close that off? And the reason I'm asking, do you think you've had these experiences because the universe was like trying to shake you and be like, wake up, you really are very psychic and intuitive?
Yes. I mean, I was born clairvoyant, and my mom is clairaudient and clairsentient. My brother is telekinetic. I think there's just some weird genetic fluke, you know, that has delivered us these little special gifts. But it took me a long time to see it as a gift. You know, I think that initially it felt quite a bit like a curse, and it felt intrusive. And when I came back the first time, all of that was, you know, it wasn't just, you know, sights and sound and taste. It was that gift was also really hypersensitized. And each time I flatlined, I've become even more intuitive. So to the point where I couldn't have denied it if my life depended on it. In fact, that's sort of how it came through. So
what would you suggest for parents that have children that are seeing spirits and the parents just are freaking out? They think that there's something seriously wrong with their child. And the first thing they want to do is rush them off to the hospital to get them medicated.
Right. To make sure they're not schizophrenic.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, probably the best thing you can do is actually connect up with some form of consultant or coach or psychologist. I mean, I would pick somebody who actually is forward. I'm forward now, that I don't deny who I am or what I do or what I can do. My intuition has been proven time and time again. I have people who have needed to make very important decisions, and I could at a house owner, it was like a 10,000 square foot house. And the house itself had some issues in terms of energy that was flowing through the house, not good for the owner, not good for his family. And after doing a 2-day consultation with them, I said, absolutely, you have to move. We're not going to be able to resolve this. Wow. And I told them what date he would sell and the price that he would sell it for. Yeah, I was going to say, so he's just said that's not even possible. And I said, that's what's going to happen. And he called me when the sale was made and he said, I don't understand how you do that, because here's the contract, sent me the contract, signed on the day I said for the amount. And I'm not a realtor. So
right. That's cool.
You just play one on TV.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, I had it. Okay.
Follow-up question. Can you personally yourself diagnose someone, a child that, like, sometimes children are so intuitive that you would almost, especially if you're not really aware, think that they maybe do have a bout of schizophrenia? Where would the parent draw the line, or the, I don't want to say doctor, but the physician, let's say, yeah, the physician, like, how would they know? Where's the line? Because it's really fine.
Yeah. So I'm a licensed psychologist, which means I've been trained on the diagnostic manual. So for a person like me, when I see kids and adolescents all the time whose parents think, do we need to get medication? It's all about accuracy. So if somebody is hearing a single voice that is telling them to do harm to themselves, to others, to animals, or is intrusive, like the voice is repeating all the, you know, negative stuff, typically that is not spiritual in nature. That is a part of the brain that is funneling too much information, and it's honed down into one little channel to try, it's trying to help the brain, but generally speaking, not in a healthy way.
Gotcha.
And that's when medication to kind of silence that noise does tend to help those folks just function better. It doesn't take it away, but they can function better.
Do you still feel like medication's written kind of freely, like without, like as a blanket thing right now, or do you feel that?
Weirdly, no. I would say actually... Even just getting antibiotics for your child now is very difficult. So, and if they, even if a psychiatrist wants to start a medication, they tend to be extremely conservative now. So, you know, for me, when I work with children that are clearly have special gifts, I am evaluating for that. I want to know, what do they see? What do they hear? What is the message? How do they feel? And then I will absolutely use my own intuition to see what I can tap into. Generally speaking, it's getting permission from the child and the parent to sample what it is they're experiencing. And, you know, depending on what I see, I may describe that to the child to say, you know, is this familiar to you? And if I get a big yes, then we talk about
that's
how
your affirmation.
Work with that energy. Yeah. Mm.
Got it.
When you flatline 8 times, do you think that has something to do with the fact of, because I know people watching the show are going to look at it from different places, like, oh, well, she made a soul agreement and, you know, she did this or whatever like this. Do you think in your case maybe that something or some energy is bringing you back and keeps bringing you back to re-educate you, to recycle you back and now get it out here, kind of thing like that? Do you ever look at it from that perspective?
I have considered myself, and I had different experiences. In my last set of flatlines, I had gone in for surgery, and I happened to be wearing a bracelet that said no opiates, big red bracelet, because they just stopped my heart. I don't know why. It's because I'm special, I guess. And it's written all over my charts, and they gave me 4 different rounds of opiates. So they just kept on knocking me out over and over again. And so my very last flatline, I lurched up and screamed, no opiates, you know, and they looked at me and they were like, holy, you know,
they probably freaked out.
The Antichrist.
Yes. So, I mean, I consider myself, you know, here to teach the medical community. And each of the times I've had these experiences, there has been something for me to come back to help the medical community understand or help the community at large understand. And so for me, I'm being returned, and I'm really thinking cat-like. This is my 9th life. I'd like to just stay here. I'm paying attention, God. You got
a good omen behind you, as I see. So yeah. you got
That's
a good
right.
omen. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
It seems like you got that. So tell us about your book here on conscious leadership. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's Breaking Through. You read the title. Thank you very much. It's a how-to guide. So what we find is that people who lead just sort of from their heads, if you will, they don't tend to really show up as authentically. They don't really show up as themselves. It's almost like if you're going to run your company or run your life or run your family with a how-to list, or just to say, well, do what I say, not what I do. You know, like if you're to lead from that, you're not going to get people to follow you. Like even thinking about my own children, you know, if I just say, go do it because I said so, but this, nothing's going to happen. They'll just look at me like, that's ridiculous. But if we can show up from the core of who we are, if we can actually connect to who we really are, and we show up authentically, people can feel us, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
They feel who we are. They know us. And if they know us and they can connect to us in that way, they'll like us. They'll want to listen to what we have to say. And so for leaders, you know, so many are sort of taught to take charge and tell everybody what to do and delegate everything, but they haven't learned to allow people to see their humanity and to see their core self. And when they are able to learn how to do that, it's amazing how clear their vision becomes and how clearly they can communicate with other people, and other people then see the leader as someone they want to follow. And when they want to follow, they become much more productive. The bottom line changes. Everything changes. And it's not so much just, you know, tell the leader, be friends with your staff. That's not it. It's show up as yourself. But, you know, I know maybe as well or better than anyone that I had really bad things happen to me in my life. And I learned to become incredibly self-protective. I became a warrior. And I was hell-bent on making sure that nobody could see my vulnerability. You know, after all I went through, I was going to become untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of leaders, they wear that same suit of armor.
Yes,
and
they do.
And so so I wrote a how-to book about how to step-by-step learn how to connect to the self and connect to something greater than the self so that connecting to others becomes easier and more productive, basically.
Very nice.
I imagine it's therapeutic when you're writing that book, right? Like almost like self, your own self-therapy. Like get this out of my system kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Get it out of me.
So what do you do on a daily basis to connect?
I was thinking about, that this morning, actually. There's a guy named Hal Elrod, and he wrote a book called The Miracle Morning. And Hal has sold millions of this particular book. He had a terrible medical experience, and as his therapy, he wrote this book about how to start his day that would enable him to be kind of his best self every single day. And that was his miracle morning. Now, Hal, I think, starts about 4:30 in the morning, and that's actually not in my DNA, so that's not how it looks for me. But I had to learn how to really invent my miracle morning. And for me, that is trying to get enough rest, because I have an odd sleep cycle. And so if I can get enough rest and I wake up, I get coffee, I get some toast, some fruit, I put it on a tray, I actually bring it back to bed.
Aww, that's nice.
I open my curtains so I can see the outdoors, and I sit and I listen to the birds, and I sort of allow my body to wake up, and then I do meditation and prayer, do some gratitude. Sometimes I pull some angel cards to sort of see what kinds of messages are coming through. And if I can start my day that way every day, I'm a rock star, you know?
Absolutely.
And you, work or family. You call that your miracle morning, like starting your
miracle? That's my miracle morning.
So, yeah, because I'm going to steal that one too.
I took one from the last guest.
I'm going to take these ones. He had a good one
too. That's
right. Yeah, well, miracle he's morning. Even writing it down.
I'm writing it. I'm letting you know on air. I'm taking this one.
I'll tell you, I can sell Hal Elrod's book just by using the phrase and, you know. Google like Miracle that. Morning, and there
miracle
he is.
Morning.
Yeah.
The Miracle Morning. And the other guy said, what he said, have a fortunate day.
Yeah.
You know what
instead
I mean?
Instead of a L-U-C-Y day.
Instead of having a lucky day, have a fortunate day. Yeah. So anyway, there's so much you learn about this, and that's why you got to always keep tuning into Spiritually Raw, everybody, so you can always get some great lessons. Dr. Sage Brosnan, it's so great to have you on air with us today. Thank you very much for sharing that part of yourself with us. Can you let everybody know how they can connect with you, where they can find out more, reach out to you?
Sure. I have a corporate website. That's sagewisdominstitute.com. And I have a personal website that's actually, I think, going to be re-released and in a brand new fashion next week. And that's sagebreslin.com. I also walk and talk with people on their turf or mine. And that is comeandwalkwithme.com. So any of those will work, and you should be able to reach me on any of those websites.
Right on, right on. Okay, it was great having you on, and we'll see you next time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and stay well. So, wow, another great guest, right?
Two great guests, Jay.
Yeah.
Just one.
Another great guest. That's why I said another, meaning that there was more than one.
Yeah, every day.
All right.
Thank you, everybody, so much. I don't know about you, but we had a great time on this side, and hopefully you did too, and hopefully you learned some great information along the way. And together, we will turn the key to universal harmony and create a unified world. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And remember, tune in often, tell all your friends. And most importantly, may all your dreams come true. Many blessings.